going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right. Welcome to another edition of the Going Deep podcast, a golf edition, as we grip it and rip it and try to go deep on this episode, a sport that I am terrible at, full disclosure, but low-key I am falling in love with, and that's for many reasons. One, it's because of the fashion. Love me some good golf fashion. Two, it's because of Full Swing, the Netflix show that has really taken over the metaculture, if you will, in terms of sports docuseries. I think many people would say that Drive to Survive is the standard. There's been some one-offs that have come that people have been really interested in, like the Beckham series, for example, the Patriots Dynasty series. People are really loving, for me, as a football player, it's quarterback. But I think the one that I've seen the most conversation about in terms of memes, reels, debates at the water cooler. Do people still have a debate at water coolers? Because we all bring our own mugs of water, your own Stanley Cup. The point is, Full Swing, I think, has changed the perception that people have of a sport and its athletes more so than any of those other series. And let's be honest, if you were just coming up with some storylines in a lab, the future of a sport would be a good one. And that is exactly what we've seen documented in season one. And we will see that continue to be documented in real time in season two as the cameras are back up for a second season of Full Swing. We're going to spend some time on this episode talking about golf. And we'll start with Full Swing. For those who haven't seen season one, it's a quick watch. The episode's around 40 to 45 minutes. They follow a diverse group of professional golfers, people at the top of the leaderboard every Sunday, and people fighting to keep their player card on the PGA Tour, and people who are leaving for massive money on the LIV Tour. How all of those things intersect is what they look at in season two, plus some of the drama around the Ryder Cup. Remember those great visuals of Rory storming out of the SUV, being held back? Well, we'll find out maybe a little bit more about what was going on and the emotions of the Ryder Cup. The series follows, obviously, the big major championships, the Masters, PGA, the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, and, as I mentioned, the proposed agreement between the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour. People forget about the DP World Tour being a part of this conversation, and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia and all of the controversy that surrounds it, given that the backers of LIV Golf were seen as pariahs at one point, and now maybe they seem to be double dipping in terms of having their cake and eating it too. All of that is shown in season two. That is out on Netflix right now. And I wanted to get an appraisal because I've screened it, and I will tell you that it is even better than season one. But the interesting dynamic that changes is in season two, some of the characters from season one are so much more famous now. The galleries that are following them are bigger. The amount of scrutiny that they have on their games in any given weekend is higher. The autograph requests are more frequent. So there is a benefit, but also a tax to being a part of Full Swing. I want to find out what that's like, what having cameras up all the time has been like, knowing what a phenomenon it's been, and what's it like to rewatch all of the drama around LIV and the Ryder Cup. No better person to talk about that with than not only a PGA Tour member, but someone who has an episode around their life in season two, and that would be Keegan Bradley. Let's listen to and learn from Keegan Bradley on the Full Swing Effect.
It's been quite the year in the world of professional golf.
Some serious breaking news. The PGA Tour today announced a controversial deal with the headline-grabbing LIV Golf.
Oh.
Like, wait, what?
What happened?
There has been a lot of controversy and a lot of uncertainty.
This year, the players from the LIV Golf Tour go up against the PGA Tour.
This sort of changed the dynamic between you guys.
A lot of people feel a bit of betrayal.
I feel like a sacrificial lamb.
Do you feel like you should be compensated for not going to LIV?
Yeah, pass.
You know every season's gonna bring different challenges.
Oh my God!
Why are you being so much?
All your competitors want to know if you're going to be the next threat. Or just another flash in the pan.
Yeah, I don't think I'm allowed to be here.
Keegan, thanks for doing this. It's a great series. I found I learned so much about the players, even the ones I thought I knew after watching it. Did you learn anything about the players you're competing with?
Yeah, I think it gives us a chance to sort of show our real side, our real personalities. I know for me, said this a million times now, but I struggle to be myself at golf tournaments because I'm stressed out and I'm worried about performing and I'm nervous about making the Ryder Cup, or I'm nervous about the FedEx Cup, or I'm nervous about my driver's not quite right, or and I'm not able to relax and be myself. So I felt like this gave us or me a great opportunity to show, you know, the world really of really who we are.
Biggest insight for me was all of those emotions you spoke of, but also the emotions of the family members and how that impacts the golfers. Can you put in perspective what going through a season, a series like this, is for the village around you?
It's brutal because, you know, you'll have missed a cut and you're home and you're, you know, now you're going to a school function or something and you're pissed off and you're thinking, your brain's going like, what can I do to get better? What did I do wrong? And you're not like, sometimes you're not there. You're thinking of this and you try to detach, but sometimes you can't. It's just like with any job, you know, you're thinking and then they got to go through the ups and downs of the tour as well. And then they got to deal when I leave for tournaments and my oldest son is sobbing at the door as I leave. And it sucks for me, but then my wife Jillian has to deal with it, you know, when I'm gone. She's got to deal with that whole side. So it's a very strange life. It's strange, but I rely on my wife more than anybody, and I'm so feel so lucky to have her on my side.
After the first season was such a huge success, people watched the last actual season already projecting what that might be like in a Netflix series. You lived through it in real time. Were you going through the highs and lows thinking about the fact that it was going to be documented on Netflix?
Yeah, there's a right before I had heard some guys had seen their episodes. So I texted Chad and I asked if I could see it. And he was like, all right, we're going to watch it. You can watch it tomorrow at like 5 or whatever it was. And I was with my wife and we were a nervous wreck for 24 hours waiting for this. Like we were like, my wife was like, I'm not watching it. I'm too nervous because she's not used to being on this side of the camera and like being, you know, we were just so nervous because it's really a scary feeling to put your family in front of, especially your kids. And that was something that we sort of were nervous about, you know, and we didn't know what, you never know what they're going to put on or how it's going to look. And, but we were so happy with it and very proud of the stuff that they showed.
The things that people were curious to see play out were the LIV Golf breaking news relative to PGA Tour and the emotions around the Ryder Cup. You lived through both of those things as well. Mm-hmm. Can you give me your assessment on how that was like for you to watch again?
Yeah, so I watched the episode and I haven't seen the part one of the Ryder Cup episode, so I haven't seen any of that, but I'm so I the next day I was like irritable and I was like pissed, and my wife was like, it's good you're reliving all this Ryder Cup shit again. And it was, I was like pissed off all over again. So it was it's so strange to watch yourself in something like this, but we keep saying like how special this is going to be for our family to have. I mean, think about if at one of the best years of your career work wise you had a camera crew sort of following you around and documenting it. Like how fun that's going to be to show, you know, our grandkids, or, you know, to show our kids in 5 years when they don't have any memory of any of this. So that part of it, we feel very lucky.
Well, I feel lucky to have seen it. I think the entire golf community is really excited about the fact this sport is being shown in this light. And there's audience that's finding it that weren't traditional golf fans, but now are because of the series. So thank you for your participation and giving us your perspective on it.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much to Keegan Bradley. You can see Full Swing right now on Netflix. Season 2 is up. And if you didn't see season 1, you don't have to watch season 1 to be able to understand and keep up with season 2. My wife is a season 2 adopter and got in, but I would encourage you to go back to the beginning because it's just a great watch. One of the things actually that's touched on in both seasons of the show is the accessibility of golf for everyone. It's something that Rory McIlroy actually touches on, and he feels will be part of his legacy moving on. And it's actually pretty fascinating to watch how many of the current golfers talk about Tiger in the 90s wearing red, his first record-breaking appearance at the Masters, as the thing that got them into golf. Well, do current generations have the same relationship with golf, and can they find their way in it the same way? Well, one of the barriers of entry is cost to play, and as much as I love the fashion, cost to dress. We'll go deep on those things after the break.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is the show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that you had the show. Thank you.
So for a long time on Going Deep, we've been talking about accessibility and belonging in not just sports culture, but in the fabric of sports, and certainly that's been an issue in golf. And someone who's breaking down those barriers and spending a lot of time thinking about these issues is Joshua Butler, who's a visionary in the golf space, and he's the founder and chief officer of Jay Butler Golf. Now, he's got his own interesting story from a really diverse, dynamic background. He's a former D1 student athlete, also a former C-suite executive who's worked, you know, for multiple brands in North America, and also worked in sectors like healthcare and higher education. And he applied his over 15 years of experience in brand development, in marketing, in sales, and solving systemic complex issues about accessibility and affordability to sport he loved, and golf, and adding that expertise to the on-course golf experience, which is essentially what he's doing with his clothing brand, Jay Butler Golf. It is a brand that looks to serve and have high impact based on their values, but it's not something golf has been necessarily concerned about because they haven't had to. They've been able to continue to drive sales. And even in the pandemic, what were people yearning and reaching to do was get outside and play golf. But given the economic climate now, how expensive life is, how small household margins are, and the fact that golf is still expensive, are we going to see a shift? And can we shift the culture in order to eradicate the problem of, forget about minorities, BIPOC people, women, everybody struggling to be able to play this wonderful game unless you are wonderfully rich? Let's go deep and listen to and learn from Joshua Butler on the Jay Butler Golf Experience and the future of accessible clothing in the sport. So one is, no surprise, you're looking fresh. So I'm going to need to get my hands on that fit. But like I'm an interesting test case personally because like I like the idea of golf, love the fashion, love the thought of being outdoors, having some friendly competition with some friends and maybe a couple drinks. But I've never felt welcomed in the space. But that's changing in terms of the colorways, the collabs, the kicks. Why do you think that change is happening, and why do you think it's necessary?
Well, I mean, in the golf industry in general, money talks, right? So the more people you bring into the sport, the more money the traditional sport can make. The unfortunate part is that while there's more people gaining access to be able to play on the public courses and the munis, that's like always been a thing. You still have your private courses that are still very exclusive, very expensive, and still tend to lock a lot of people out. Golf is also one of the sports that's intimidating because it takes a lot of money to try and learn the sport. Going out, hitting with a club and not knowing what you're doing, like the average person is not going to want to commit to that all the time, but it is the greatest networking game on the planet. You get to spend uninhibited time with your buddies, with your friends. And I mean, there's room for everyone. But the problem is that a lot of the people that have been around this game for a long time, they want to keep the same rules. They don't want to change the fashion requirements. They're very rigid. And as long as that rigidity exists, it's still going to cause a lot of people, maybe even like yourself, that are just like, oh, it's not worth the hassle and the money to get into this type of sport.
You talk about the fact that money talks, and when you want to erase that barrier of entry for people to be able to come into the game, you know, you look at the fashion, and to get a nice technical golf polo could be really expensive relative to, you know, what it would cost at Sam's Club. But you're not necessarily, you know, looking and feeling your best. What can brands do to make just outfitting before you even hit a ball more affordable?
Well, I mean, brands need to determine how greedy they want to be. And I think that that's the ultimate problem, is there's a lot of greed in the industry. A lot of brands and companies talk the big talk about creating access and affordability, but then they're pricing their apparel to the point that the average Joe, the average person, can't afford it. $120 for a polo shirt is not accessible. It's not affordable. Yes, you can go spend $19 on Amazon or at Sam's Club, like you said, but it's the quality, it's the technical aspects of the fabric that's going to matter. So brands like mine and Jay Butler Golf, like, I'm committed to making sure that the prices are affordable across the scale. And most people don't realize it's not just the direct cost to the consumer that's important. It's the ability to do business correctly with the other businesses that we're doing business with. So the golf clubs, the other retailers, the big box stores, the more that the suppliers like my company, like a Jay Butler Golf, continue to drive the cost up on those businesses, they have to charge that cost off to the consumer. And that's why we get stuck in this endless cycle of the greed chase. Now, yes, there's a lot of money to be made, and we're a capitalistic society, but at what cost? When you're talking about inflation and the fact that people can't afford to even put food on the table these days, the last thing they're going to want to do is spend their discretionary money on a sport that's, one, locking people out simply because they can't afford it. And the second part, you should be able to walk in any place and look and feel like you own it without having to break the bank to do it.
So the finance dudes in my group chat are going to hear that, and they're going to say, this is all economics, and the market will dictate what something should be priced at. And you, Jay Butler, have shareholders to think of. You have people who potentially want to invest to think of. And so it's actually your fiduciary duty to try and get those margins as big as possible. When you hear that side of the argument, what comes to mind?
Well, I mean, the finance folks might be outdated is more the problem. They're not thinking about the current era of where we are as a society. And I still make great money with Jay Butler Golf. But I think when you're following the market, there are so many golf clubs. In fact, I was meeting with one of the most exclusive golf clubs in the country yesterday and just signed on to take my apparel into their shop out in Palm Springs. The one thing that they said is we're thankful that somebody is thinking differently in this space, because the more we continue to drive the cost up, this is really not about the ability to make money. Like the golf courses, the retailers, all the individuals that are associated with golf are making money, because there's one fact that's true. In golf, people expect to spend money. So as long as that expectation is there, that price can drive up as high as people want to go, because the expectation is that golf is expensive. So it just has to be this way. So for those finance folks, and even I do have shareholders, my shareholders love what I'm doing. They love the aspect of being able to deliver a community benefit. And people that are very wealthy, not only do they make a lot of money, but they also give back a lot of money too. So they also want to be involved with things that are helping to build up the community and being able to give back in the right way. So there has to be companies out there like a Jay Butler Golf that balance the scale. And that's all I'm doing. I'm creating a different option out there for the everyday person that doesn't want to spend $150 on a pair of slacks or $200 on a hoodie. They can go out and spend $49 or $60 on a hoodie, and they're still going to look like they walked in and spent the same amount of money that the other guy spent on a Travis Matthew or Peter Millar or something like that. Like, you don't have to do that in order to look great.
So this is a small cog in what is a bigger systemic issue. When you look at challenges in terms of affordability in the sport at large, and ways that there can be some mutually beneficial efficiencies found, what are the other ways you think we could bring the cost of the sport down?
Well, the equipment is always going to be the hardest part. I mean, as long as there's advancing technology, and I mean, the United States, we're the most innovative country in the world. That's a fact. We innovate from everything from retail to healthcare, even though that's debatable, but our innovation happens here. So there's a cost to innovation. So when you consider those costs, there's just some things that unfortunately we may not be able to change as associated with this particular sport. However, there's the other side of it, where there is a happy medium. You have companies like mine that can do their part to help to create balance. And balance in the system is a good thing. I know we tend to have extremes in the world on one side or the other in terms of thinking, but then there's a sensibility that's right in the middle. And for those companies, and there's some good companies out there, like I admire Under Armour. Like Under Armour does a really great job of pricing very effectively, being innovative, and still being able to get their message out to in a very broad mass scale. They're not out there pricing polos at $90, $100. They're not pricing their slacks at $150, $200. I mean, there is a balance in the system that has to be created. And that's how I think we changed the narrative a bit. You can have your luxury. There's people that don't care about the cost. They're going to show up, and you've got a guy that drives a S550 or a Lamborghini or a Rolls Royce, and he's going to say, shoot, to hell with price. But then you got everybody else, and that's the lane that I'm thinking about. That's the lane that my company is focused on. It's the guy that's making $65,000. It's the woman that's out there running errands, that's doing her thing, that's building a career, and she doesn't want to go and spend $200 on a dress. So if you're going to create opportunities for people, you have to be able to create a wide scale of opportunities across companies, across price scales, across finances, where everyone has the ability, from an egalitarian standpoint, to have access to the same resources.
You mentioned Under Armour, which is a great comp, and I love Spieth as a player and a person, but man, that Curry brand golf gear is fire. In terms of this sport, you know, having some intersectionality with other areas of the culture, finding ways to collab, why is it important, and what opportunities do you see in that space?
Yeah, well, you have to make the sport cool. Like, nobody wants to be a part of a boring type of endeavor. You have guys like Steph Curry. I mean, Steph is one of the GOATs, and he's got this unique skill set where he brings joy, happiness, fun into a sport that traditionally hasn't had that type of scenario. Of course, Tiger brought that in. You've got some other exciting characters that have done it as well. But when you look at, especially on the minority side for Blacks, African-Americans, Latinos, people of Asian descent, you got to have these really cool individuals that make people want to be a part of it. We now live in an era of social media marketing and social media influencers. You see guys like Carter going driver off the deck, the DOD king, and people love that type of stuff. I mean, you've got the companies out there that have the cool patterns and the fun shirts, and it changes the perspective of, oh, I need to get into this because I saw my buddy doing this, or I need to get into this because I saw the woman out there that's driving 300 yards just like the guys. So we're breaking down the barriers. We're breaking down the perceptions. And I think that those collaborations are important across brands as well, to not just be so siloed and only thinking about how we're developing something, but to partner with other brands that are doing similar things. Like, shout out to the guys at Eastside Golf. I mean, look at what they've done for the community, for Black people in general. Their clothing is a cultural movement. And they understand and recognize the moment that they're sitting in and the ability to cannibalize the African-Americans that are out there that want something different, but also understand that, you know, the traditional aspect of how you show up at a country club or how you show up at a golf course can really turn a lot of people off. So I think once we get the intellect, the knowledge, the collaborations to understand what each other are doing and just continue to use those as building blocks, it just makes things a lot better for everyone wanting to be involved.
The guys at Eastside Golf and what you are doing, you know, maybe culturally move things in a certain way and to your point, cannibalized in a way more so than, I mean, I would argue Tiger Woods and his line did with Nike, which certainly was great and sold a lot of red polos, but it's not as if people were lining up to get, you know, Tiger Woods golf cleats, and they're wearing custom Air Maxes instead. Now that Nike has pivoted in terms of the direction, and Tiger has, you know, found safe ground elsewhere, what do you make of what that relationship tells us, and what its legacy ultimately will be?
I think we have to appreciate the genius of what happened and the indirect impact that Tiger had by being a Nike athlete. You think about the era of when he joined Nike 27 years ago. And at the time, of course, there were no true Black athletes that had ascended to that height in the sport. It inspired an entire generation of people to actually get into wearing golf fashion. It inspired a whole generation of people to actually start looking at the game. And that's not just Black people. That's young people across the board. Like one of my athletes, Connor Nolan, he's a professional golfer. Connor says all the time, I was inspired by watching Tiger Woods. Tiger wasn't boring. He was exciting. It was that vigor that came with him that made the sport awesome. So what he did is created a new era of athletes and expectations around the sport. Nike was a catalyst because it gave him visibility. It gave the money that was needed in order for his stature to grow bigger and bigger and bigger. So that impact is felt for generations. It also has opened the door for companies like mine, like an Eastside Golf, to be able to say, look, there are true access issues. It's not that you're excluding the fact that majority populations of Caucasian people don't have the same struggles. But the truth is when you walk up to a country club, Tiger had the same issues. He wasn't even allowed in the best country clubs in the world, and yet this is the greatest player in the world. He knew that the only way to be able to be accepted was to go out and break the course records and win. So you got a whole generation of people right now that are inspired by what he did and what we're now seeing with the athletes that he inspired that are pro, that are the APGA is another aspect of being able to create these great avenues for young aspiring minority talent. So I think we have to give appreciation to what that spurred and the opportunities that Nike relationship created with Tiger Woods.
I wonder if in a different but similar way, there would be a female athlete in the sport of golf who was able to do what a Serena Williams or now a Naomi Osaka has done for tennis. You know, every time I drive past a golf course, I see groups of ladies playing or ladies playing with men more than I can recall. That's a huge opportunity, obviously, you know, for companies to make sure they're catering to a diverse set of people. Does it need a specific catalyst like Tiger, or can the companies do some of that work before that happens?
Well, there's the big boom of like one person, and a lot of companies look for that one gigantic superstar. But I think the smartest part in the industry is looking at the plethora of talent that exists now and being able to help support that talent. I think First Tee was a great start to trying to explore and find those individuals. I think the perception of what they're wanting to do is good. The execution doesn't always follow the intention. So as part of that, you have people like Arose Zhang. She's Asian descent, but she has this fire, this vigor, this technique that is just amazing to watch. People like her, I mean, she was at USC. She had a phenomenal career. She was at Stanford, had a phenomenal career, did all these amazing things in the sport. And now she's going into the LPGA and she's an icon. So you look at people like her. There's a young woman that I know. Her name is Koa Seymour. She's out of the LA area. This young girl is, I mean, phenomenal. She is what I believe to be a future LPGA star. You've got to find these individuals that have not only the talent and the pathway to be able to be successful, but the companies have to get behind them early and support them and stick with them, even when they're not in college and even when they're not in the early stages of their career where the highlight is on them and all of the spotlights are there. There is a consistent behind the scenes need of the living expenses, the equipment, the practice, all of those things. That's where the sport will really start to come to life. And then you don't need just a Tiger Woods to be a catalyst. You have all of these individuals out there because the companies have gotten behind them early and made sure that they have the resources and the pathway to go be successful and not have a Tiger Woods family, which had to second mortgage their house just to give him access.
Being a founder and a business owner, like any, you're thinking, I need to grow profit year over year. I got to grow market share year over year. So you're looking, you know, into the distance in terms of where things are going. Are you fearful for the future and the size of the consumer base in golf? Are you bullish on it? What do the prospects look in your eyes?
No, I'm extremely bullish. And the reason I'm bullish is because I've got a great business model that is not going to cause my business to stress out when people get tired of the economic situation that we're currently in. I think that we're hitting a plateau in the golf apparel industry where consumers are tired. I mean, when you look at relationships with the golf clubs, and I'm in those golf clubs across the country talking with those general managers and head golf pros, and they're saying, look, January was one of the slowest months we've ever seen. And we're not seeing the retail sales like we used to. But when you're raising course fees and daily fee schedules, like there's only so much that the average person is going to be able to afford before you just completely price them out of the sport. When it comes down to where I see the game going, there's more interest now in golf than there ever has been. So if you're meeting people where they're at and you're helping people to have a great experience, and it's not just about apparel, it's how a company like mine gives back. I do very unique things. I sponsor recreational, amateur, and early career pro athletes because those tend to be the people that need it the most. Entry fees into tournaments, the ability to afford new equipment, or sometimes just a stipend to go get gas to get to the course. Like, those things matter. And when you're investing your money in the right place, you're going to build market share because people are going to be able to trust the brand. They're going to be able to trust the fact that you have their best interests at heart. And then along the way, if I'm consistently putting out a phenomenal product, which I am, then it can only be a bright and significant future ahead. And that's why many of the golf clubs that I work with, and I've got significant partnerships with four of the largest golf management companies in the country right now, is because they see the aspect that I'm ahead of the curve and on the right side of the history that's coming, rather than being behind it and just doing what everybody else is doing, which is trying to make as much money now, because there might be a time when we might not be able to charge the prices that currently exist.
So you're talking to someone who's got, you know, upwards of 10 J's, and at 40, I don't play basketball. I got, you know, over 10 fitted caps, and at this age, I don't play baseball. You know, but I wonder, for you in your space, given the athleisure movement, you know, that we saw in the pandemic and the change in terms of fabrics people were willing to put on their body at any type of day, is there an opportunity for the business outside of the actual golf course in terms of it being lifestyle and even work apparel that people are looking to put on?
Oh, yeah. In fact, golf attire is lifestyle attire. And in fact, I would dare to say we're developing a new category called golf leisure. You see people wearing, I mean, just like yourself right now, you have on a hoodie. I sell hoodies. Hoodies are seen in corporate Zoom calls, corporate meetings now. You have the average workspace is no longer requiring the everyday suit and tie that we saw 20, 30, 40 years ago. We're now seeing guys showing up in polos and showing up in slacks or button downs. So the golf apparel space is needed. It's needed because that is really kind of the new direction of where we're going for everyday wear. You see a lot of women now that are wearing, the leggings for athleisure. I make joggers because at the end of the day, if they're comfortable, they feel well, you can wear those from the course to meetings, to your everyday running of errands, those types of things. So that has to exist. And that's actually a big part of what I do with the designing of the apparel, is understanding that it has to cross over. The very shirt that I have on right now is a new design. It's a placketless design, but it's still a standard bladed type of collar polo. And that's important because it's acceptable at private country clubs. It's acceptable at the public and the munis. But you can also wear this to the gym. You can wear it out to, you know, time with your friends and those types of things. And that's important. People need to be able to have crossover apparel. And you talk about J's, like, even J's are now a cultural thing in golf. You see them on the golf course. Harold Varner has made it, or Harold Varner III has made it a big thing for the Jordan brand as well. Eastside Golf, of course, them, they have a great partnership because there's ability to take fashion and make it really cool in this sport and allow people to go do whatever they want on the back end side and not have to go and buy a whole entirely different outfit to look fly.
Well, you do look fly with the blade collar, so I'm gonna need to know. I'm gonna need to know, you know, the entire catalog, because I got to send on that's dope. And the joggers is key, because you're speaking to someone who, if they find a pair of joggers that fit well and that, you know, are comfortable but like appropriate enough that you can dress them up and dress them down, like I will buy them in any color. In any and every color. So you're speaking to my heart, no doubt.
And because I've got pro golfers, in fact, one of the top 150 golfers in the world, he said, dude, I've worn Peter Millar, I've worn Bonobos, I've worn McCade. He said, I have never felt anything like the Jay Butler golf joggers. And I've even got a PGA pro out of Canada. His name is Michael Kahn. He's over in Vancouver. Michael wears my joggers all the time. You can see him on his Instagram. He is constantly raving about that. He's like, dude, how did you get these this durable and stretchy at the same time? And they look masculine. They feel good. They look good. He said, I need to get my hands on more than these. So I'd encourage you to check them out.
No doubt. You're turning me into a brand ambassador. Lastly, before I let you go, I know the way your mind works, you're very Gretzky, kind of going to where the puck is going, not where it is. What's next? Where are you hoping to continue to think outside the box, push some envelopes, and maybe test the limits of this thing?
Yeah, so one of the things you have to do with your brand is stand by what you're saying and practice what you preach. So I'm constantly going to have my focus on access and affordability, as well as matching that with quality, fit, and comfort. I want people to have access to the best. And in order to do that, guys like me that build companies, people that are out there that can afford it, you'll look and say $65, that's affordable, or $55, that's affordable. Maybe not for the average person. So I started a limited subscription service on each piece where people can actually buy the piece now starting at $8 to $13. Pay it off over 4 weeks. They don't have to worry about any shipping, returns are free. They don't have to worry about all of the things that come with the barriers to trying something with confidence. And the reason that I'm doing that type of thing is because the average company will charge you shipping once you hit a certain price point. They want you to spend more in order to get more. But the truth is why don't we start with get more so you don't have to spend more, but then eventually you'll spend even more with that brand because you trust that they have your back when nobody else does. And that's what J. Butler Golf is built off of. I am very altruistic as a business owner. I was in nonprofit philanthropy for 15 years. So I know that there's a whole host of people out there that don't even know sometimes that they need the very things that they're being restricted from. So if we can create the awareness, build the opportunities, and invite everybody to the party, then it builds a cultural movement that looks different. It's then not just about black and white. It's about the economics of ensuring that everybody can strive forward and get access to the best in quality and the best in outcomes in golf apparel and luxury.
I love it. I didn't mean to turn it into a Shark Tank, you know, elevator pitch, but I just really, really appreciate, you know, not only what you're doing, but the values behind it, because, you know, I had this conversation with some friends on the podcast earlier, and, you know, specifically when you're looking at black culture, hip hop culture, even if when you look at its influence and its success, the beneficiary of it is often not black people. It is someone else who is owning the app where the TikTok dances are, or the record company is not owned by us, or the fashion brands that are worn during the NBA walk-in is not ours. So we influence, but we don't benefit. So I love the fact that you know, when we support you, we are both influencing and benefiting, but you are also not having a crabs in the bucket mentality, but pouring back in the community, bringing other people up with you. So thank you.
You're welcome. I pour a good amount of the proceeds from the sales back into minority athletes, as well as just those individuals that need the support. Just a couple days ago, I signed a long driver out of Mississippi. He's a phenomenal guy, 54 years old, black gentleman. And you never know he's 54 because he's still vigorous. He's got these dreams. And he said, man, just the ability to get equipment sponsored is huge. He said, I need a new driver head, but the driver heads are $500 and $600. So those types of things matter. And that's what I want my company built off of. You know, golf is expensive. Your apparel shouldn't be. And that's the slogan of my company. And I want people to be able to go be great and enjoy the discretionary spending in places that matter. And if my company can bring that type of benefit long term, then I'm going to put that stake in the ground, drive and make an outcome for people that need it, and build a loyal base and enjoy this game.
Love it. Man, woman, black or otherwise, if people want to support and if people want to consume, where should they go?
Yeah, so the website is www.jbutlergolf.com. So very easy, straightforward. All the socials are the same: Instagram, Facebook, X, TikTok. Trying to make sure that people have awareness of what's being put out there. Instagram has been a little bit more fun recently because I just completed filming for a reality docuseries that's coming out on Amazon Prime called 60 Day Hustle. I was one of 12 companies out of more than 220 applicants that were selected for the show. I won't give a spoiler, but I'll just say that might be a possibility I made it to the finale. And it was a great experience. But more than anything, going through that, I started to learn even more about what it takes to pitch, market, build a brand that people can relate to and not restrict any particular audience. Because, yes, we know that in this sport that black and brown people are definitively locked out in many ways. And it often starts with the economics. But on the back end side, there's a lot of people from all different walks of life, all different nooks and crannies within the world that want to play the sport, that enjoy it, that get a break from the stressors of life. But they're having to weigh, do I spend $100 on a tee time, or do I save that for gas and food on the table?
Not a choice they should have to make. And thankfully, you're making those choices a bit easier and giving people lots of great choice in terms of how they look and how they show up, both in the country club and the golf course, but also the office and the club at night. So thank you
appreciate you so much. And if there's ever anything we could do to help, let us know.
Donovan, thank you, man.
And that was Joshua Butler of J. Butler Golf. Love the tagline. Golf is expensive. Your apparel shouldn't be. You can get some of that apparel, as he mentioned, at jbutlergolf.com/shop and give them a follow at jbutlergolf is the handle on social. That's it for this edition of the Going Deep podcast. We will have another episode for you next week. But until then, feel free to like, favorite, share, and subscribe. We're available wherever you listen to podcasts. On behalf of Lance and Show, I'm Donovan Bennett. Talk to you next time.